chatting with Charles Stevens, a Cookeville artist who is an abstract sculptor and jeweler. So you have some, it looks like you're sculpting jewelry, and you sculpt objects as well?
Primarily, I started doing sculpture initially in college, and went from there doing more figurative things initially, and now I've been, my wife had suggested, you know, unless you're going to do something really large for somebody's lawn, they probably aren't going to go for something so small, and not everybody can afford to do something big, so why don't you scale these things down and make something that people can wear? So she said, jewelry, that's where you ought to be.
Yeah, so you're like, it's almost like you're wearing a piece around your neck or your ears, and they're fantastic. You brought some pieces with you, and they have these abstract shapes to them, and then it looks like they're painted too, correct?
No, they're not. These come in different materials, the 3D printed things that I've been doing, but the polymer clay is all... the color is embedded within each bunch of clay, and so I mix up multiple different colors. The people tend to have been more drawn to that particular motif that I've been working with currently.
What I'm wondering is, how do you get the color inside the
to be such the exact things?
Yes.
Well, I you know, when I first started doing this, the stuff with the polymer clay, because I really was doing involved with more doing the 3D printed stuff initially, because I thought that'll be, it's kind of like some of the new tools available for artists. I was very interested in technology and how that was all being done in my former life as a video animation and graphics guy. We would go and do different video work, and for different companies like Harley Davidson or GE Medical Systems or whatever. So I would see rapid prototyping happening, and I thought, oh, that's going to be how I'll be able to make sculpture without making dust.
We're chatting with Charles Stevens, abstract sculptor on the scene. Charles, how did you get your start as a sculptor?
As a sculptor, I thought about this for a while. Because now that I'm getting on in age, I was thinking about how did all this begin. And it comes back to my dad, who was he was an airplane mechanic, but he also did art on the side. And I, as a kid, I would help him. He would, you know, he was doing a lot of stuff with real clay, not polymer clay. And he would make heads. He made a couple heads of me and my grandfather and different people in the family. And so I would help him. He would make it out of clay first. Then we would make a waste mold from that, cover it up with plaster, then split it in half, and then, you know, cast plaster into that. And then you would chip that off with a hammer and chisel. And I never put it together until I was in art school. And I thought, you know, I always liked drawing a lot, because I found my brother's drawing pads when I was a young kid, and I started copying stuff that he had done in there, and I always thought, oh, yo, I'd like to be an illustrator or something like that. And then once I got to art school and started using my hands more, I really fell in love with doing everything. I guess I was just drawn to it by its tactile and being able to turn things around versus the flat surface. It seemed more appealing to me with the play of light on a surface and things like that, that really drew me more to the sculptural elements.
Did you start off with your hands?
I start off, yeah, just using my hands. We would the school I went to was Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design. It was actually Milwaukee School of the Arts when I first went there. It was kind of like Layton was the big school that was in Milwaukee initially, and then that folded. And so it was kind of made up of a bunch of the people left over from that school that said, hey, we should really still have an art school specific in Milwaukee area. So they had limited resources as I was working, so we didn't have any kind of metal working or casting, you know, bronze casting or welding, nothing to do with metal. So it was either carving with stone, carving with wood. And one summer in between junior and sophomore and junior year, somebody, a guest teacher came in and exposed me to polyurethane foam, of all things. And she said, you know, you might like this because you can carve it really quickly and get your ideas out. And that's exactly what happened. That was like being a duck on water for me. I started carving all kinds of really, you know, what I liked, very unusual shapes. And it allowed me to get a lot of different ideas out quickly. The problem always becomes with sculpture is the finishing aspects of it. So that's what kind of took me away from it a little bit, because oftentimes a lot of the stuff is very, it's not nice, you know, to be around. It's very environmentally, you know, dangerous and kind of, you know, toxic in general with, you know, for humans. So polyester resin to coat the polyurethane foam, not a good medium to be messing with a lot.
In the beginning, were you always sculpting abstract figures?
You know, I started off, he would get a lot of the stuff in school. They give specific kinds of things that they want you to kind of work with. One of the things I started with was a big human, life-sized human torso of a woman. We had, you know, live models, and they were naked, you know. But I mean, it was, you know, you see everything, right? So I mean, as a, you know, we start off with figure drawing. I mean, the art school, it was nice that way. In freshman year, you get what they call foundations course, so you get a taste of everything to really get you started. And then that's when I kind of started going, yeah, I kind of like making things like this. But starting off, yeah, figurative work initially, and then abstract things. You know, take something small, blow it up large, you know, and see what happens when you do that. So a lot of different specific criteria that they would give us to do, and then. We started doing more abstract things just to see what was going on. And so then that kind of led me one thing to the next, and there you have it.
And then here you are.
And here I am.
Fantastic. We're talking with Charles Stevens, abstract sculptor on the scene. Welcome to The Scene, presented by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. I'm your host, Emily Newman, and today we are chatting with Susan DeMay of Made by DeMay Ceramics. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So what is the creative process when you are working with slab? Just run me through that, like if you're making a piece.
Well, I look at architecture. I look at my friend's work. I look at other art forms, or I look at historical ceramics. Like there's a school of art and design called the Memphis style. And it's very contemporary, and it's rather asymmetrical, and it uses this bright colors, and it usually is focused on furniture being sculptural or glassworks being sculptural. So I look to that as a source of inspiration. I also like some of the things I see in steampunk, which is a kind of trend. And it incorporates nature and industrial aesthetics together. So I look to the outside world for inspiration in those types of wares.
And then how do you create what you're doing?
Well, I have a slab roller, which looks a little bit like a wringer washer, not that maybe everybody knows mm-hmm. what that is.
Yeah.
But it's two rollers, and you push a flat piece of clay through the rollers to get a perfectly even slab. And you can do the piece pretty large. And I usually do a very large piece, and my slab constructions are a little bit larger than the typical vessel shape and size. And then I use templates sometimes, or I wrap it around a roller, or I press it into a mold. And from there, I incorporate textures and various appendages.
Okay. And then you paint it?
Well, people have a misconception about how glazes are applied. I do very little painting of glazes. I do mostly, like, for the inside, I'll pour in a large cupful and swirl it around and then pour it out, covering the whole interior. And then the outside might be dipped if the bucket is big enough, or it might be splashed, or it might be poured, and then maybe some of the details are brushed. But on my production wares, most of those designs are created through pouring and wax resist. Mm. So I'll do a glaze background, do a wax pattern on top of it, and then do a second glaze over that. That's how the flowers are done, and that's how the trees are done in my landscape.
I always thought it was brushwork. See?
Yeah, no, really, it's very little brushwork.
Mm. It's interesting.
With brushwork, you don't get a nice, even coat. Mm. You see the splotchiness of the brush strokes.
Gotcha.
With pouring, you get a nice, even coat.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Well, we appreciate you coming out today. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I'd love to hear your story and get to know you better. So thank you so much.
All right, my pleasure.
Chatting with Charles Stevens, abstract sculptor. Your work's very unique. And where did you find the inspiration to start creating in this manner?
Well, I may have mentioned, my wife had kind of suggested rather than doing the sculpture, I should do more something more of a that someone could wear, whether you know man or woman or whatever. But I guess as I've been doing a lot of these things, I think maybe more. My forms tend to be maybe a little bit more feminine oriented or whatever. A lot of flowing lines, a lot of smooth, you know, shapes. Some can be cut like a knife edge kind of thing, but, and then flowing into something that may be more of a vessel form or whatever. So that's kind of got sent me down that road. However, when I was doing the 3D printed stuff, was what really was drawing me to doing some of the things I'd been carving initially, she had suggested I start using polymer clay because it being maybe a more cost-effective means to get me to that same area, which actually it has changed my direction radically with what I've been doing, the forms I've been creating, because at least currently I'm still finding my way with the polymer clay stuff. I've been studying, looking out at the artists around that I know, and trying to find what do I like and what appeals to me about it, and I've been trying to find figure out ways to emulate what I've been seeing others do that I really like. So I found a guy in Canada who was his name is Dan Cormier, and he is offering different courses online for working with polymer and. It worked out great, especially with all of some of the pandemic things or whatever going on now. We're like, okay, can't go anywhere. I can sit here and watch my computer for I don't know how long at a time. But I mean, I've been doing different things prior to that as well with him. So that's worked out well this way. So,
would you say that living in the Upper Cumberland influences your craft?
I'd say yes. We when we first moved from Wisconsin down to Tennessee for family reasons down here, I've got a 99-year-old mother-in-law, still has cocktail hour every day. So
that's probably why she's still here.
I know, exactly. It's a lot of fun going over to visit with Virginia. So anyway, so we went and traveled a lot and have been to – one of the first things we went to was the Tennessee Craft Show in Nashville. And I think it was probably the second year we were down here in 2016. And we were blown away because we had been to a bunch of different festivals of that nature around the country, and there was a big one in Milwaukee too called Lakefront Festival of the Arts. But we just found the caliber of the artists that we saw that year were just really, really strong. I mean, every booth we went to, we were just so impressed with all the different kinds of mediums that people were working in, and every one of them was just outstanding. And as we started traveling around, we would, you know, go to, say, Gatlinburg area, and there was a whole artist trail that goes in through that area. We started kind of seeking out different people, and I forget exactly how we got – we had gotten some information on the Tennessee Craft Organization. So as we've been doing this – oh, I know, too. Here's another big shout-out. We went to one of the galleries in Nashville and – saw Brad Sell's work, and we were like, wow, never seen any kind of wood carving like that before, you know. So it was like, yeah. And then they said, oh yeah, by the way, that guy's in Cookeville. And we're like, Cookeville, you gotta be kidding me. So long story short, after we joined Tennessee Craft, we got introduced to Brad, and as it turns out, I'm kind of working a little bit with him from time to time now. I started off doing a little bit of shaping and whatnot on the wood stuff for him, just like real rough things, and finishing off on some furniture and stuff that he's working on. But now I'm currently actually going back to my old life and doing some video production of him creating what he's doing for a gallery in North Carolina.
Isn't that fabulous?
Ah,
it's a small world.
It is a small world. And it's been pretty cool, and don't really know. I've been fighting going back to doing my former life's work as a video production person, only because I feel the burden of having to create something for somebody else, you know, whereas doing it my own.
It's all relative. It's all art, you know?
True.
So
true.
We're continuing our chat with Charles Stevens, abstract sculptor on the scene.
Helping guide you on the path to a new craft. It's your art on the scene.
I am with Maggie Sunsera of Forest Gems, and Maggie specializes in silk art. We've got a couple of really beautiful pieces here, so describe, first of all, if somebody gets one of your pieces, what they're getting.
They're getting a hand-dyed piece of material, wearable art is what I call it.
Tell us the process behind your silk pieces.
I do a silk-to-silk transfer on scarves, so I'm actually taking silk scraps and laying them on a silk blank scarf. Then I'm wrapping them up and cooking them for 2 hours in a vinegar water bath. And when I'm done, the silk color transfers to the blank silk scarf so that you have an array of colors that will mix right next to each other. I can have a red and a yellow, but they will not blend in together with this process. I also do an ice dyeing process, and I'll do that on silk or bamboo rayon, where I take a scarf outside and lay it on a screen, pour ice all over it, and then I'll sprinkle powdered dye on it. And with that, as the ice melts, it forms its own design in the scarf itself.
So is that the one that has like the floral type pattern to it?
I call it a Monet painting.
It looks like a Monet painting. And then how does one wear these scarves?
Okay. You can wear them as just like a man's tie. You can also fold it twice over as a loop and just pull the ends through, or you can pull one end through, twist the loop, and pull another end through. They also work well as table runners.
Well, I see you have a table runner on here right now, and it looks lovely. And she has a lot of soft colors, and then she's got some blue and white patterns. And these in length, how long do you say one of these is?
They are all 6 feet. Some may be a little longer than 6 feet.
So you have lots of options with what you can do with them, because they have plenty of length on them. And they're beautiful, and they would go well with any type of clothing.
They also work well as a good head wrap.
Yeah, I could see that too. Well, thank you so much. And where can we find your work?
My work is on display at the Art Center in Cannon County.
Wonderful. Thank you, Maggie.
Thank you.
I'm chatting with Charles Stevens, abstract sculptor. And so you use 3D printing?
I've used 3D printing, and currently working with polymer clay for the most part. The work involved with doing the 3D printing stuff, it's very similar to the way I used to approach carving, which it's kind of like I get into a flow as I'm turning the object over in my hands and maybe arbitrarily pushing a hole through it or whatever, that I don't really necessarily have a particular object in mind as I'm working on it. I usually kind of attack the form and let whatever speak to me. I mean, not to get too deep and crazy,
yeah.
but you know, the form starts to make sense to me after a certain amount of time. And I would do the same thing when I was working on it with the 3D printing stuff, because I use a software called ZBrush, which is kind of like an industry standard for a lot of modeling stuff. Like you see the guys like in the Pirates of the Caribbean, the guy with all the octopus legs hanging off of his face and stuff. I mean, it's used more for that kind of thing, but it's really like a big digital piece of clay, so you can really manipulate and get all kinds of neat things to happen. And I don't spend enough time working with that, but anyway, getting back out of that and into where I'm at currently with the polymer clay stuff, I was following this several different people in the field that I really liked a lot. This Dan Cormier from Montreal, Canada, he had done a lot of really neat things. And one of the classes that I took from a piece that I brought in here today is kind of shows this, what he calls as matrix. So it's a series of being, having to be fairly precise. I mix up all the different colors of clay. And this is, it's kind of like a gradient. So I build a gradient out of different balls of clay, and then I squeeze them all out and make these flat sheets, and I cut real small specific planks a certain size out of each sheet, and each sheet gets winds up getting to be like maybe an inch to or not an inch, but like maybe a 16th of an inch or an 8th of an inch in thickness, and then I kind of compress all those together into another stack of all these gradients. Then I flip it on its side, and I pull something that looks kind of like a vegetable peeler through it that gives me a nice, real thin slice of a particular veneer of this gradient, and then I can kind of keep slicing it that way, and then re-piecing it together, because once the clay is polymer clay, it's kind of almost self-adhering to itself, so you can stick it together and then re-burnish it together so that it stays stuck together, and then create another pattern of the clay. So I've got, like, you know, when you take all these images that are stuck on a side and then turn them on edge, then I start getting this more of like a little cube kind of pattern that shows up. So it's difficult to describe some of these things when you're on the radio. I know you should really be here. I'm sorry.
No, it's honestly, you've lost me completely. when I look at it and then I hear you describe it, I'm like, how on earth, like, does your brain work this way? It's amazing.
So exactly. That's why it was helpful to have somebody who kind of showed me how all this actually works. So it's the polymer clay. The neat thing about polymer clay is it's relatively inexpensive, so anybody can kind of get into it for a low amount of dough, as it were. But you can also make things very badly. You know, I'm trying to really go towards this, what the precision that this person, how he creates his stuff, really drew me to it. Mm-hmm. And the sideline is, now if I really wanted to go to like my third career, I could probably become a surgeon from all the.
You absolutely could. And it's interesting you call this piece the matrix, because I see an M in it. Did you notice that before?
No. That's just one of the patterns made with that. But it's actually his term for the matrix. That's because it's very geometric and kind
Yeah, I see that. And you created all these little beads in here as well.
I did. Yeah. So that'll drive you nuts too. So it's a lot of. A lot of different things that can be very time consuming. So when somebody goes, wow, why does that cost so much? I could say, well, I probably haven't, like, I can't tell you how many hours I have into each thing.
I would never ask you why that costs so much. I think it's actually underpriced, in my opinion.
Well,
so speaking of pricing and all that, where can people find your work?
Well, you can find my work. If you go to the Tennessee Craft website, you can find me there initially, which will send you back ultimately to creators-at-heart.com. Yeah, on Instagram, there I'm Charles Stevens 59. So I'm not consistent with my naming conventions. At some point, I'll have to fix all that as time goes on.
It's okay. You're an artist. You're all over the place. It's standard.
You never know what's going to happen next.
No.
Welcome to The Scene, presented by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. I'm your host, Emily Newman, and today we're chatting with Justin Hurst of Journeyman Marble Works. That kind of rhymes. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. Thank you so much for coming out and interviewing with us. So you specialize in blown glass marbles. Is that how you would... describe it, or would you describe it differently?
It's borosilicate lamp working, but it's still a form of glass blowing.
All right. It's so you brought some here today to the studio, and I'm absolutely amazed with these. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before. They're incredibly beautiful. They are marbles, but then like with blown glass designs inside, and they're fantastic. You even have a kaleidoscope here, which is... I don't know how other to describe it than absolutely mind blowing. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
When did you get a start working with glass? Where did that happen?
Kind of led into, originally I was a machinist, and that's where the Journeyman name came from, but it started about eight or nine years ago. I would just play with a little hothead torch and just melt little broken pieces of glass that I found and did little beads and stuff on arc welding rods. And it stuck with me.
Did you receive training anywhere? Did you have like an apprentice? No, you just were like, I'm going to get things really hot and make shapes with them and things like that?
Yeah, originally I was a journeyman machinist, and I paid my way through trade school at 16. And by the time I was about 21, I had an ex-fiance put me about 30 grand in debt.
Uh-oh.
Lost everything, homeless for a little while, and it just completely changed my perspective on the world.
Yeah.
So.
So you're like, now I'm just going to be an artist and do what I want to do.
Yeah, it was just something I was doing in spare time, and once I started getting to the point of where I was comfortable selling some of it, then I just went with it, and I've been doing that mostly full-time for about 8 years now.
How can I find your work if I want to get something online from you? Where would I go?
I have a website that's Journeyman Marble Works with an X, and that's .com. And then I have a Facebook page and an Instagram page.
Awesome. Are you going to look into selling in any other online avenues, or does Instagram and Facebook work pretty well for you?
I'll pretty much just keep it at that.
Yeah.
And I have the page just to help with sales, because taking care of Grandpa is a full-time job as it is.
Well,
so.
Good. Good for you. These marbles would add some serious value to your life if you purchased one of these. They are absolutely gorgeous. And every time you look at them, you see something new, and they have a lot of dimension and depth, and they're just like my mind is blown. They're wonderful.
Thank you.
Thanks, Justin. I appreciate you coming out today.
Appreciation's appreciated.